next thing here.
Excuse me, sorry.
Am I boring you here? He's fucking yawning, and you know he's the one who's been off for the last bloody
exactly.
week.
Exactly. I'm still blaming the morphine, mate.
Anyway, Joe Gardner scores. Going to back good, back to good things now.
Yeah.
That was easy for me to say that.
Exactly.
In the first half as well, I believe there was a bit of controversy in the game. Was this? Oh no, this wasn't it. Actually, sorry. I take it you've not got anything football related or anything like that, no?
Oh, come on, Derek, calm down. You got a classic match out of me, for fuck's sake.
2 seconds, I'm getting tea here. You know, we've snatched a draw for the yep. goals. What's the phrase? Snatched.
We've snatched a draw from the jaws of victory. Is that's that what you're about
I was
to going say? To
say the goals of defeat there, but that seems wrong.
That sounds like an American phrase, that.
I've snatched. I've snatched.
No, is that not a Dutch accent?
Yes.
Or is that your Sean Connery accent?
That sounded like Sean Connery there. Indy!
It didn't sound like any of them.
Yes.
It never fails, Derek. No, it never fails.
Never
that.
Fails. Right. Hi folks, and welcome to the next edition of the iReady podcast. Yes, Dave and I must have shat the bed because we've got another pod out within 2 weeks of the last one.
Within 2 weeks, mate, I don't think that has ever happened, do you?
Not since the infancy of this podcast, no.
I still think that this is probably the earliest that we've brought out another podcast since then, but it's just incredible how me being off my work on the sick actually means that we can do this more regularly. It's quite scary, that, actually, but there you go.
Yes, as ever, I'm your host, Derek, and you've just heard the dulcet tones of Dave there.
Yep. So what's happening, Derek?
Well, still, we're looking for a manager, but that might be sorted now. So,
yeah.
You know, we've had 2 wins and a loss to go through. So only 3 games this week.
Oh, that's incredible.
For us,
you might actually go into some in-depth analysis about the matches, Derek, that you've not been able to go into for quite some time.
I don't know about that, because I was at 2 of them, and the third one I got pissed off at, so...
nothing unusual there, then.
No. So we'll just batter on then, and we'll go on the pitch and down to the tunnel. No, we won't. I honestly don't mean to do this. I'll need to write it down. I seriously don't mean to do this every week.
I can actually hear yourself, and you're actually building up to it, and you can actually hear in your voice is like, right, I'm going to do this as professionally as possible, and then you completely and utterly mess it up.
As ever.
Right, you want to try again?
So we'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch.
That's it.
Right, so this is the game I kind of couldn't be arsed with. I started editing the last podcast when the game was still going on, because I was pissed off at that time. Mm-hmm. It was Friday the 24th of February. It was a 2-1 loss away to Inverness Cali Thistle.
Yep.
Now, we lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Wilson, Kiernan, Wallace, Halliday, Heineman, Torrell, Mackay, Miller and Wycorn. On the subs bench, we had Garner, Windass, Dodu, Forrester, Hodgson, Holton, Alnwick. It's been a while since I've read a team out, by the way.
Exactly. Now, Derek, you are going to have to go solo in this big time, and I'll give you a reason why. Now, as you and the rest of our 3 listeners out there will realise that me and you are not, as we were the last time, recording in the same room, and I do, our household has been reconnected to the internet, now fantastic ultra-fast fibre broadband that I have. But as you and everyone else knows, I had a bit of a fallout with Sky, and I got my Wi-Fi cancelled. So that was the reason that we had to do the last podcast. I came to you and we recorded it in your impressive studio there. But this game in particular, I still wasn't connected to the internet, and we, as I say, we had a fallout with Sky, so I cancelled all my sports channels and everything like that. So basically, I had no way of watching the match, so I had to go back to the 1980s and I had to put the radio on and listen to the radio. Unfortunately, it was BBC Radio Scotland that I was listening to, so as you can maybe appreciate, it was completely biased commentary against us, so I didn't really get a fair outlook on the match. But by going by what I think you're about to say, there wasn't much to write home about regardless, so yeah, you'll just have to go solo on this one, Derek, and tell us exactly what your thoughts and everything were of the match.
We were pish. Next game. No, but just on the point of you listening to BBC Scotland there, at least they were actually at the game this time, not watching it on a bloody TV monitor like they do at Ibrox, but that's another story. Yeah, exactly. Really, to sum up the game, I can't remember most of it because I kind of switched off. It was just absolutely dire in the first half. Inverness scored on the 45th minute. I generally don't even remember if that was the first half or the second half now. Wycorn scored a penalty in the 67th. And Inverness got a last-minute goal in the 89th to lose 2-1. You know, it's just we offered nothing. As I said in the previous pods, you know, you would have thought there was some sort of spark with a new manager there, but again, they offered absolutely nothing. Devoid of any life, devoid of any chances, just powder puff. I can't even remember the goals, to be quite honest with you. So we'll leave that there.
Yeah, there's not really much more you can say. Just as you say, we would have thought that maybe with, even though he is the caretaker manager, we would have thought that there would have been some changes in maybe a different outlook by the team, possibly. But as you said, really, really poor stuff, and would have thought we'd have done much better. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Inverness no bottom of the league.
I think they were at the time, and I don't know if they still are, but certainly at the time,
Aye, so yeah, as you say, really, really, really poor stuff there, and you can quickly move on to the next match.
Next game was Wednesday, the 1st of March. It was a 3-2 home win to St Johnston. We lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Kiernan, Hill, Wallace, Toril, Holt, Heinemann, Wycorn, Miller, Mackay. Subs bench, we had Alnwick, Halliday, Hodgson, O'Halloran, Garner, Forrester and Wilson. To say it was a night and day performance, that's kind of an understatement. Certainly, we played fantastic. Maybe a wee bit, and the first 10 minutes were a wee bit cagey. Certainly St Johnston did start to get a grip in the game, but then we just overran them from there and we completely controlled the game up until that point, obviously.
Yes.
Mackay scored in the 22nd minute and Wycorn scored on the 48th minute just after half time. In the first half as well, Wycorn was denied a stonewall penalty. He wasn't even booked for simulation, which if it's not a penalty it must have been
exactly.
Simulation.
Yes.
And there was, funnily enough, their player went down in our box not long after that, and he was booked, and I've not watched it back, but I've heard a few comments that it could have been a penalty, so.
Okay.
St Johnston did score in the 74th minute, and we thought, here we go. You know, we never like to do things the easy way. Every time we've been two goals up, we've always, you know, made it hard for ourselves going into the last kind of 10, 15 minutes. This was certainly no exception. What were your thoughts on that?
As you say, I think we could have put the game to bed in the first half, absolutely no problem. We were well on top in the first half, Derek. You know, it was quite impressive. I'm not trying to get too carried away. It was St Johnston. We were at home. We had been making this big thing, or I had at least, for quite some time, the fact that we hadn't scored more than two goals in a league game. And we went in at half time. It was only 2-0. And I said to myself, this is going to be another, you know, it's going to be one of the games you could just tell that St Johnstone were going to get something because they had done very, very little in the first half. And I thought St Johnstone will make some sort of chance. And unfortunately, our defence, the slightest chance against us, you know, 9 times out of 10 usually leads to the other team scoring against us. And because we hadn't put the game to bed, you just knew that St Johnstone were going to get one chance and they would probably score. And that's exactly what happened.
Exactly. So they scored in the 74th minute, and then I'm undecided on this one, to be honest. Kiernan saw a straight red card on the 78th minute. Now, it happened pretty much right in front of me. That shows you how kind of stupid of a place he'd done it in. It was right up against the touchline near the dugouts, and he just came flying in with a challenge. And he actually got the ball. That was everybody in the stands' first impression. He got the ball. He taken the man. He came from behind, but he got the ball. And we thought, you know, oh, well, can he give a free kick for that? But certainly with the pace of it, you know, you can understand a wee bit why he done it, why a free kick was given. However, for him to produce a red card for it, a straight out the bat, was just...
I thought when I saw it, Derek, that it was a hard challenge. I was expecting, or I would have expected, a yellow card. But as you say, a red card was, you know, a bit harsh on him. But the one thing that we've got to say is the way that Kiernan's been playing for us this season, I don't think there's a lot of fans were too bothered with the fact that he was getting sent off and he was going to get banned for the next game or whatever. And it's, as I say, I hate slagging the players off, but he has been a major weak link at the back for us, and he keeps getting his game, and we've all been calling out for him to get dropped and or have some time out of the team, because I don't think he really shows anything at the back. So, but it put the team under pressure straight away. The fact that we went down to 10 players, it gave St Johnstone a lift, and then inevitably they went and equalised.
Yep, they scored in the 87th minute, so we thought we snatched a draw from the jaws of victory there. But up steps Heinemann on the 91st minute, and he scores a cracker of a goal.
Yeah, great goal.
Fantastic, and obviously another last minute winner. I think that's about 4 or 5 at home this year. We've had fantastic atmosphere in the end. Obviously a lot of people chucked it when St Johnstone equalised. In fact, a lot of people chucked it when St Johnstone scored their first goal.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, it was a great feeling as well. Again, potentially papering over cracks. We struggle to see out games, but
I know,
on the
I know.
Whole, we deserved it, I would have thought.
That's the one thing that annoys me, Derek, is we just don't seem... We get that second goal and we just seem to stop for some reason. We don't go all out to, you know, absolutely hammer a team, you know, especially in these circumstances, and we do make enough chances in a game, you know, to inflict a big defeat on someone. I know that that was slightly different in the next match, right enough, but certainly in the league, we seem to struggle even at home. But as you say, the fact that we still managed to get the goal right at the end, it really lifted everybody's spirits. We were down to 10 men and we still managed to score a goal. Heinemann does look like a really good player, Derek. I mean, he does look a touch of class, a guy, you know, and we're glad to have him just for wee moments of magic like that one. It was an excellent goal that he scored, it really was, and we scored 3 goals.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, totally. I think that was the first thing that we were texting each other to say. my God, we've actually scored a third goal during the match. But no, I was really pleased with Derek. As you say, last sort of 15 minutes before we scored, you know, the goal that they scored and then their equaliser, we just looked like a completely different team. You know, we had absolutely no fight in us whatsoever, and we basically gave them 2 goals out of absolutely nothing, and that's what they really need to stop. They really need to try and stop that. We need a bit of resilience in there, but just relief that we did manage to get the third goal, and fair play to them.
Yeah, I mean, on the back of the red card, Rangers did appeal Kiernan's red card, and it was rejected, so he was given an automatic 2-game ban starting from the Old Firm game. So I would normally be raging about that, as I said in Twitter, but I'm fucking thanking my lucky stars.
There was actually somebody criticised you for saying that to Derek, and I was like, you know, Are we missing something here with Kiernan? Is there, you know, are we being too hard on him? Because I certainly don't think we are. And there was a couple of folk were a wee bit, not upset with you, but they were like, oh, you know, that's not exactly the way you look at things. But I think it is. I think I would be quite happy for him to be out and for Wilson to come in. And there's a lot of folk don't like Wilson, but I would certainly have Wilson in the defence every time before I would have Kiernan. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I don't think that Kiernan's the answer. And there was somebody that put a thing up on Twitter the other day to sort of show the statistics when Hill and Wilson, when Hill and Kiernan have been at the back, than any other defensive pairing, and they were saying, you know, that's the most amount of shutouts that we've had is when they've been playing at the back. But I just can't see it, Derek. I just didn't think the guy's that great at all.
No. But I do think he was, a lot of people were saying, he was stupid for, you know, yeah, he was probably stupid for going in for a challenge like that at that position on the park. It was, again, another needless challenge in midfield, right at the touchline. But I think he got more of a hard time for the red card because it was him. See if that was Kenny Miller that had done that.
Yeah, you're right. And as I say, I do hate having a go at our players and criticising them. I don't think the guy is, you know, a great defender. Even with somebody with experience like Hill, he seems to be missing a lot. You know, especially when there's cross balls come into the box, it seems to always be his man that's been left unmarked when they score goals or things like that. It just always seems to be him that's sort of to blame where a lot of the big goals that we've been losing at the back, but yeah. I think I've maybe dwelled on that a bit too much.
Yes, going into the next game, it was rather surprising. Saturday the 4th of March, it was a 6-0 win at home to Hamilton in the Scottish Cup quarter-final. It was an unchanged squad from St Johnston as well, which is kind of justified given how well we played for a majority of that game.
Yes.
Somebody, you know, before the game put on Twitter the fact that, well, it's a cup game, you know, why are we playing a full strength squad? And it was like, as I said to him, it was a case of, well, we're not that great. Two, it's Hamilton, who are a Premiership team who just beat Aberdeen in the league. And three, it's the Scottish Cup quarter final.
Exactly. You know,
it's like, can I get a grip? But anyway, what can I say? Hamilton were pish at the back, but we put our foot on the accelerator all game. We played through the middle, played direct, and we got our just desserts in the end. It's the way we should have been playing all year. Fantastic.
Yes, and I still cannot believe that Joe Gardner scored three goals in a game. I think if I was the... Derek, you know my feelings on Joe Gardner. I think if I was the Hamilton keeper, I would just be retiring and out, to be honest with you. I'm not a fan of Gardner, you know that. And there's a lot, and we've given him these support, so well done to him for getting the hat trick. He caused a lot of controversy in the match, which I'm sure you'll get into as well. Whether he should have stayed on the pitch or not, I don't know. I'm glad he did. He scored these three goals. He took his last goal very well, but I'll let you summarise the whole thing.
Yep. Wycorn scored a penalty on the 33rd minute. There was. He claims it was quite soft, but, you know, Torrell had the ball in the box. He was kind of getting pulled down and he got his foot stood on before he could put a shot away as well. So, regardless if it was soft or not, it was still a foul. Again, it was one of these cases with the kind of start of the game. We kind of were a bit not on the back foot, but we never started as well as we could have. But then 10 minutes in, we got a foot on the game and then we started playing from there.
Yep.
Can't remember the minute what happened, but at some point in the nick between there, Fotheringham actually did handle the ball outside of his box.
Yes,
Given where I sit, I couldn't see it properly from how far he was out his box.
Derek, it happened very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. So that's why I'm going to, you know, there's been such an uproar, but of course there is because it's us. And everyone said that the referee had a shocker and that, you know, it should have been... It was, but it wasn't until you watched it on a replay that you seen, you know, that he was outside the box when it happened. And it was very, very quick. The whole thing happened so quickly that it was impossible for the referee to see it, whether or not the person on the line, you know, had a, you know, couldn't really see for there. But everyone was in uproar about it, saying that, you know, he should have been sent off. It was a deliberate handball outside, but it was a very, very quick piece of play that happened, and, you know, that's the reason that the referee didn't see it. He was lucky to get away with it. Yep, I'll give him that. But again, these things happen. You know, just remember a couple of seasons ago when we played Falkirk and they got the penalty when, you know, their player was about 3 foot outside the box and they got the penalty for that. You know, these things happen. It was a very, very quick part of the game, and, you know, that's the reason that the referee didn't see it. Hindsight's a great thing, but again, because it's us, there's an absolute uproar about it, and, you know, the referee's on our side and all this BS, you know.
I did actually sadly look up the rule book on this, because even some of the pundits don't understand the rules.
Right, go for it, Derek.
It was a misconception that a deliberate handball for any player on the field, regardless if it's a keeper outside his box or a handball by a player, that it's an automatic red card. It's an automatic red card. It's an automatic red card if it deliberately stops a clear goal scoring opportunity, which that, as we know, is very open to interpretation about whether it's a clear goal scoring opportunity or not.
Okay.
Well, take it back if you want to be like a Celtic fan, take it back. Stuart Kerr handled the ball outside of the box in an Old Firm game. Yellow card, direct free kick. Chris Sutton and his famous couldn't be arsed playing deliberately handballed it twice in the space of about 10 seconds. He was already on a yellow card. It wasn't a straight red card, it was a yellow card. So a common misconception from all out there.
Again, though, Derek, like I said, it was, you know, the way it all happened, it was really, really quick how it all happened. I don't think that Wes Fodringham, you know, intentionally ran out of his box to handle the ball outside. It's just that it all happened right at the edge of the box. The momentum has took him out. It's all been very quick, and that's how it's happened. You know, it's not been the fact that he's come charging out and thought, you know, sod it, I'm going to handle the ball outside the box and all that. It's just, it's all been where it's happened, how quick it's happened, and that's just, you know, it's been there. The referee's missed it. And that's been it, you know. So, fair enough, these things happen. But again, because it's us, it's highlighted majorly, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Back to good things now. Joe Gardner scores on the 48th minute. And then a bit of controversy on the 56th minute with Joe Gardner getting a yellow card, which could be debated. Could it have been a red?
I don't know, Derek. I think if that had have happened to one of our players by, you know, somebody in the other team, if they'd have ran up to get the ball and completely miss it and totally, you know, batter one of your players, we would be going daft and saying that he should have been sent off. So, you know, again, it's one of these things, it's what the referee sees. It's caused another major uproar with the usual Chris Sutton and all the other members of the press out there for saying that he should have been sent off and stuff like that. It was a hard one, Derek, and it was a nasty one as well. The thing that I did think was hilarious was when Garner was lying on top of him after he'd done it. He had the biggest smile on his face ever after he'd done it, which didn't look too good. But again, you have to, you know, we have to be thankful that the referee didn't send him off. And the fact that he managed to go up and score another couple of goals after that. But, you know, a bit of controversy, and I think if that had happened to us, we would have been screaming for a red card. Do you know, think so?
I think it was one of these, another one, pointless challenge in the middle of the park where the ball was going nowhere.
Yes.
It was more, it certainly wasn't deliberate, but it was more clumsy than anything. And yeah, you're probably right, we might have been calling for it, and had he properly connected with him, it could have caused a serious injury.
Yes.
And in terms of that, I mean, I think the whole stadium at the time, there was an audible kind of gasp and like, oh, and the hushness when it happened, because I think we all thought, yeah, he's actually going.
He's off, aye.
Again, this is one of the things that even the pundits, you know, don't even understand the rules, as they were saying, you know, reckless challenges, or it was reckless, you know, things like that. And if you look back at the rule book, reckless actually means, you know, a yellow card. If it's reckless, if it's dangerous, it's a red card, absolutely.
I think there was a few folk, I think, to be fair, and I never thought I would hear myself say this, but the usual shit-stirring Jerry McCulloch from Clyde Super Scoreboard said, if a referee deems it to be reckless, it is a yellow card,
yeah.
End of story. Mm-hmm. I think the point he was trying to make was, I'm not saying personally it was a reckless challenge, but the referee said it was reckless, therefore it's yellow. And he got absolute dog's abuse, Jerry McCulloch, on social media, for the usual, you know, the green and white brigade, absolute dog's abuse. And it didn't matter how many times he tried to say, it's not, you know, that I'm not saying that he was reckless. I'm saying that that was the referee's interpretation, was it was a reckless challenge, so therefore the correct decision was made by the referee if he thought it was reckless.
Yeah.
Which is what you're saying is true. So if that's how the referee deemed it, that's, they know, the correct card that he gave. But again, it's never going to, you know, that's never going to sit with the people, the haters out there, Derek. So we'd be as well just to move on. He got away with it. It was a, you know, a rough challenge, and he got away with it. And it was quite funny to see him laughing and smiling with the boy that was lying in agony on the park, and he was lying on top of him just about. So here's hoping he doesn't do anything like that on Sunday against Celtic.
No, it's a different kettle of fish altogether.
Exactly.
Yep. Anyway, not long after that, he had a good chance up in the box. He headed, I think he headed the ball, but he headed the guy as well. And the boy was sparked out for Hamilton, and Gardner had to go off with an injury.
Yep.
He had a cut, and the boy seemed to get a nasty one as well.
Yes.
He was stretchered off. Gardner was off for about 10 minutes, and it was quite evident that Murty was getting a kind of abuse for the fans. Get somebody on and place him if he's not coming back. And you've seen Murty looking down the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, Gardner ran out the tunnel like a WWE superstar when he came back. It was absolutely hilarious to watch. It was comical. It really was. And he obviously couldn't get back on the park straight away.
Yeah.
Have to wait for the ref, but it was quite funny.
The one thing I'll say about Gardner, Derek, and I know I slate him, he obviously is trying like a bear, and he obviously is sort of relishing, you know, the chance to play for us, and he does give 100%. I just didn't think he's that great, to be honest with you, but he is trying, and he does look as if he's well up for it every game. He's maybe trying too hard, I don't know, but as you say, the fact that he come charging back up the tunnel, he was desperate to get back on. He make up for the time that he had lost being off. It was quite refreshing to see, actually. So I'll give him that for once. I'll say that he is a bit. He's a trier. I'll give him that.
I was gutted he never came out with a big Dado Purzo bandage or something like that. If I ever got a head knock on the field, I'd be asking for that.
Exactly.
Yes, anyway, back to the game. Toro scored on the 72nd minute, another decent goal from him, actually.
Yep.
And then in the 82nd minute from a corner, Clint Hill scored an absolute peach of a header.
It was a cracker, it was.
Going away from him, and he turned his...
Yeah.
Oh, it was...
Just even the fact, Derek, that we scored a header from a corner, when does that ever happen for us?
Well, I mean, that's what's amazing. We scored three goals for three corners.
Yes.
I mean, none of this bloody, you know, pish way playing it short and then trying to cross it in. So.
Yes.
Anyway, on the 88th minute, Gardner scored another goal, and he capped off his hat-trick on the 91st minute. Fantastic for him.
Yes, it was. It was the goal that he took. It was a very poor back pass for the Hamilton goalkeeper. I don't know if that was for his second.
That was his second,
That was his second. And he managed to latch onto that, sidestep the goalkeeper, and actually stroked into the net. It was a very, very good finish by him. I'll give him that. And I've been watching him, you know, in the last sort of few games, and some of the misses that he's had have been absolutely shocking. So the fact that he can do that, Derek, and score goals like that, you know, when he's under pressure, very composed. Maybe it's just been a confidence thing with him, I don't know. But no, fair play to him. He took his goals well, and they were poacher's goals, which is good as well for him. So here's hoping that continues.
Yep. So really, that game set up the draw for the semi-final, and we are also playing Celtic at Hampden on Sunday the 23rd of April.
So. Yes.
Well, wait on that one.
Aye.
In the table for the Premier League, we are played 27 games, so 11 games left. Won 13, drew 7, lost 7, scored 37, conceded 32, goal difference of plus 5, which is totally shocking.
Which and, it is shocking, yep. Derek, it is.
Points 46, we're 6 behind Aberdeen, who are in 3rd, 33 behind Celtic, who are top, 8 points ahead of Hearts, who are in 4th, and 9 ahead of St Johnstone, who are in 5th. So,
it's really, for the amount of possession that we have, Derek, and the amount of chances we make, our goal difference should be way above that. We should be on at least sort of plus 15 just now. And if we were banging the goals in, it wouldn't matter if we were losing goals at the back. But that, as I say, it's been the calamity between both is the reason that we're here. And talking about Joe Gardner, as I say, he's had some absolutely sitters that he's missed recently, so I just hope and pray that if he's going to be getting his game, that he's over all that, and that hat-trick there is a big confidence booster, because we need goals, Derek. We need to be able to kill teams off, and with this game coming up on Sunday, which I'm sure you're about to get into as well, it's going to be a tall order. It really, really is.
Yep. So the next games we've got, as you said, we are playing Celtic on Sunday, which is the 12th of March in the Premiership, 12 midday kickoff. Then we're again playing Hamilton at home. It's Saturday the 18th of March. Saturday the 1st of April at home to Motherwell, and then we should have got a pod out by this time. Wednesday the 5th of April away to Kilmarnock. And that's a 19:45 kickoff.
Okay.
I'll get into this bit about here about the manager and director of football, because it seems quite apt to do that. Just obviously, Frank De Boer's agent, his agent ruled out the Leicester job, which was quite telling, saying that Frank was working on a project for next season. Martin Jol was also rumoured. Barry Ferguson resigned from Clyde Post. He was strongly tipped, but he's already kind of came out and said that he's not ready to manage us. Gary Rowlett, is that Rowett? Has came out and said that he had talks with Rangers. However, it looks most likely that Pedro Caixinha, which I think is how you pronounce it, he's still the favourite. It's all getting tipped that he's about to sign. Reports are that he has agreed, a pay deal, compensation has been agreed, and he's been allowed to leave, and he's coming over possibly tomorrow, and he won't be managing for Sunday. He'll be in the stand apparently though, so. But until for the way everything's went with us, especially with the media no bugger all, it seems the club have not came out and said anything publicly, other than they're taking their time and they've interviewed a lot of people. No names have been mentioned by the club. So until it's mentioned by the club, I'm not want to make any sort of comment on this.
It's a strange one altogether, Derek. The silence for the club is deafening. It really is. It's I'm actually really quite surprised with the club and the way with them. As you say, everything is, it seems to be, it's all, I said it the last time, it's all cloak and dagger stuff, by the powers that be at Rangers at the moment, where we hear absolutely nothing. We're getting all of our news from the media and from social media. And as I say, out of the blue, this Pedro Caixinha has came out. I don't know anything about the guy, Derek, just apart from the snippets that I've seen in the media. There's been tweets going back and forward. The one for me today from Vladimir Weiss, basically saying good luck to his coach, and enjoy the greatest fans in the world, and he's tagged in Rangers and stuff like that. That has, for me, been the closest thing to, confirmation that the guy is coming, because that's, we've not heard anything else like what you said.
It's quite refreshing though, and it's the fact that the media you're in knots here, because they don't actually know what's going on. And this whole Caixinha thing, it seems to be, if it does turn out to be him, it looks as if, as is always the case with a lot of major stories throughout the news world, is strategically leaked by the club. You know, who's the person? Because don't mm-hmm. you know? He's, as you said, the names came from nowhere. Yep. You know, nobody's radar. So how in God's name would the media get a hold of him unless it's been strategically done by the club? Yep. So we'll wait and bait your breath for that.
What do you know about him, Derek? I mean, I've got some snippets, and I find it all quite baffling, you know, where this guy has came from and why he's the one that's been chosen, if indeed it is him. And it does look as if it is, because as you say, that's the only way that the media would find out, is if there was a sort of wee leak from somewhere. But I don't know much about this guy at all, apart from he did... you know, train to get all of his coaching badges in Scotland. He speaks perfect English. He was the manager of a Mexican club that won the title and got to their version of the Champions League final. But that's really all I know about him. It's very, very little. Yeah. If you get anything else, you get any idea why it's him that's been chosen to take over rather than sort of more well-known managers to the British game?
I've no idea, because I've never really researched them either, because I'm not getting myself wound up over it. It's mm-hmm. I mean, some fans are raging about it. Some fans are like me. They're like, right, let him get in, you know, support him and see what he does if it is him. So
yes,
I know that the media are touting this storyline where he was at a Celtic feeder club, being either a coach or a manager, and he congratulated Celtic at one point and winning the league. Big whoopee do. Wow, it's like Kenny Miller playing for them. Yeah, he's played for them, but he's, you know, he's one of us three times over. So mm-hmm.
yeah,
you know, you support him when he does that. So you know,
it's just the whole thing, Derek. Where is why him? Why, what's happened? What is? I mean, has there been some sort of contact, or has there been someone in Rangers who have met him when he was here in Scotland before and thought to themselves, this guy is, you know, the real deal, he's going to be the next big thing? Has it been something like that that's happened when he's been here before? Because you don't just pick a name of a guy out of thin air and say he's going to be the next first team coach of Rangers, you know, when there's absolutely no links to Scotland apart from he was here to get his coaching badges and it was here he trained. I mean, the way I see it is that there must have been some sort of contact with somebody at Rangers at that point. They must have noticed him or heard about him or spoke to him or something at that point, for the fact that, you know, it's him, you know, all these other guys that have been spoken about, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I think the problem with Scottish football, and especially Old Firm fans, is we're very insular. We like mm-hmm. to know everything. We only want to deal with things we know. And with the best of intentions, you know, Paul Le Guin was, his credentials were a known entity. He had done fantastic with Lyon. Mm-hmm. He came and he was a failure.
Yep.
On the flip side of that, you know, you've got Dick Advocaat, known entity, came and done a great job for us for the first 2 years at least, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's...
But again, though, Derek, these guys were prominent coaches in Europe in the Champions League and internationally with Dick Advocaat as well. They were well known. This guy's been plucked out of nowhere whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? I just find it strange. And I would just like to know, you know, why it was him that was picked. And I'm not in any way having a go at the guy. I'm like you, you know, whoever comes in, I'll give them all my support and I'll cheer them on. And just like what I did with Mark Warburton at the time. But again, with Mark Warburton, you knew that he had done a good job down south. And, you know, there was a lot of people were talking about him being an up-and-coming manager. This guy's just like came out of nowhere and nobody seems to know anything about him whatsoever.
That's,
you know,
that's my point.
It's strange.
Though. That's uh-huh. my point, is because we're so insular in this country when it comes to football, just because we don't know about him doesn't mean that he's not known in the football world of some sorts. You know, whether it be in the continent, whether it be like out with Europe, you've got to take that into account as well. So
I mean, certainly hope. I mean, I'm all for the guy, you know, coming in fresh ideas and hopefully hit the ground running and get the team playing, you know, really well. I hope and pray that that's the case. It's just I just find it very strange, that's all.
Just in relation to the director of football as well, again, you know, Rangers have said this is a role they're looking into. They're going through an interview process. Obviously, Ross Wilson, we said the last time, was tipped to be it.
Yes.
But allegedly, according to the media, he's rejected us.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's as well the Paul Mitchell from Tottenham. He was in a recruitment role there. He was serving his notice, and he's been let go early of that notice period for whatever reason. But then there's rumours tonight that, you know, he's going to reject us as well. Again, it's something that we'll just need to wait and see, because there's been nothing from the club. On that point, though, and kind of going back to what you were saying as well about, well, they've came from nowhere, is the kind of Stuart Robertson's came out and said that he's defended the lengthy process, saying that they could not be hurried into making appointments when it was not correct for the long-term development of the club.
Yep.
Stated that the club is not in turmoil, as the media have suggested, because we're not making any tracks in it, and there will be money available. So it's not something that's been done overnight, quite clearly.
No, I understand that.
I think a lot of fans are taking the side silence is, well, we're doing fuck all. You know, how do they know? You know, me and you don't know any better than them, but how do they know it's instantly board, you know, the board are shit, they're doing nothing? And that's what some of our fans have got to realise. Just because you don't hear anything doesn't mean their things, you know, are not progressing.
I think it's now in the age that we live in, Derek, where everything is scrutinised over social media, and the slightest wee snippet of something is all over social media. If this had been 20 years ago, it would have been the norm. Do you know what I mean? It would have, you know, we wouldn't have batted an eyelid. It would have been, you know, they're going about their business. It's going to take, you know, a while to bring someone in, but they want the right person.
Yeah.
Whereas now, everybody likes to know exactly what's going on as soon as possible. And I would like to find out eventually where they came up with Kashina, you know, and it would be great to hear that maybe there had been people behind the scenes had been watching them for quite some time and they were impressed with them and stuff like that. That's really all I would like to know about it all. The whole director of football thing is, that's now going away for, I think, the realms of what we know about football, because we're going into something completely new and completely different. And, you know, the guys on the board obviously have an idea of the type of person that they want to bring in. And as you say, everything is so, the media are desperate to get a story. And we really don't know what's happened and what official approaches have been made. We just have to go by what they're saying. But again, the board are very, very quiet about it all. So we really just need to wait and see exactly what happens. And it might just be another Kashina type thing where a name comes out of nowhere and that's who comes in. But the director of football role is different. It's not like a head coach. It's not going to be somebody I don't think that we'll have heard of before that's going to come in and do it. It'll be somebody that's been doing stuff behind the scenes at another club that'll come in, you know, with a vision to take on that role as the director of football. We just have to hope and pray that it's the right person that they bring in.
Yeah. I mean, just on the basis of like a lot of fans getting on the board's back about not having a plan B when it comes to, oh, well, we've, you know, let the management team resign and we've got nobody lined up. Just think about this. We are at the end, near about three quarters of the way through the season. You're not going to have, when you've got an existing manager in place, you're not going to have a shortlist of other managers to take over just in case that manager leaves or the manager's shit and you want to sack him. You don't have that lying around, do you?
No,
that shows no confidence in the manager. And again, if you do have that, then that comes into question. Well, you should have sacked the original manager and then got your existing manager in place. You also can't then go and, when a manager's in place, you can't then go and say to another club, right, we want to speak to your manager, because that would be over the headlines in 2 seconds flat these days.
Yes, aye. So no, you're right.
I don't understand what some fans want when it comes to, you know, the time frames of things involved. They've got to understand that we cannot get this one wrong, which is one of the reasons why it's going to have taken a lot of time, and the reason why we, you know, obviously didn't have a name in place straight from hour one when the management team left, is because you can't have that. It shows no confidence in the existing management.
Can I ask you another question, Derek? Do you think that the fans would be so on the board's back to bring in a new manager if we didn't have this up-and-coming game on Sunday coming up?
I don't think they would, because my mates of, you know, Scott, one of the guys we've run the pod before, him and his brother, you know, are no happy that, you know, Murty is going to be in charge for this game. And yep. I can see their point in a way, because they wanted the manager to, you know, come in. If he wins, that's a good momentum. But then what happens if he loses? Fans are already online,
exactly,
not happy about him.
It is a no-win situation. This game on Sunday has came at the worst time for us, I think. The one thing that I'll say about Murty, I was completely against him taking over, because I thought that he was basically playing the same team and tactics as what Mark Warburton was. But going by that last game, it seems to be that he changed the formation slightly. It was more a sort of 4-2-3-1 formation he was playing, and he certainly looked a lot more stable during the match and a bit more fight. So maybe, you know, this game coming up, it's going to be his last game. It's hopefully have the team a bit more organised than what we have in the previous matches against them. The one thing that I find strange, Derek, and I don't know if you've noticed as well, that there's not been a lot of people have been jumping to Mark Warburton's defence through the supporters. There's not been a lot of people that have been saying, oh, it was a bad move by the club to get rid of him and stuff like that. Do you think that was because, like us, the vast majority of fans were just getting fed up with the way the team was playing and these tactics and stuff like that? I mean, have you came across anybody, either on, you know, your friends on social media or anything, who have actually said that it was a bad move by the club to get rid of the manager?
I don't think any. I've never seen anybody.
No.
I mean, I'm on Twitter quite a bit, yep, and I've never seen anybody saying that, you know, we should have kept them.
Yep.
It was more, you know, on the kind of board's case, well, you should have had somebody in place already, but
yeah,
never anything about, you know, it was wrong to get rid of Warburton, so.
Yeah, it was. I've not heard anybody complain that he's still not there, so that's maybe one thing that the vast majority of fans that we're all on side about. It's just that it's a shame the way that everything's happened, because I think we all did think at one point that he was the man to take us forward, but it's not worked out like that at all. But we just have to wait and see. What's your thoughts on the match on Sunday, Derek? Do you think we've got any hope whatsoever?
I've seen,
are you going to be the ultimate optimist here and say that there's always a chance, or are you going to say, no, we've got absolutely no chance whatsoever?
I mean, I don't think, as I said in the last pod, you know, you couldn't legislate for how Celtic have been this year. They've, you know, only dropped 2 points all year in the league and still not lost a game, apart from me in Europe. But it depends on what Rangers team turn out. I mean, I go there expecting to get beat, hoping for a draw, or at least a good performance. So
the only thing for me, Derek, I'm the same as you. I personally don't think we've got much chance at all in the match. The only good thing for me is that I think the mindset of them is that we just have to turn up and we're going to win.
Yeah,
I think that that's what they've got in their heads. They've got in their heads that we're a total shambles, and they're basically just going to turn up and steamroller us. Where maybe if we set out right for the start to basically get stuck right into them, don't give them a second in the ball, you know, we might frighten them. I don't know. That's maybe just me being, you know, again, the ultimate optimist and hoping among, you know, that we can do anything. On the way that it looks as if we're going to get absolutely pumped. But I really, obviously, it goes without saying, I hope not. I just hope we go out there and get fired right into them and don't give them a second on the ball and just go all out, hit shots everywhere and anywhere. And you just really pile the pressure onto them, and hopefully something will go our way. They have an off day and we actually play the best game of the season that we've played. And I still can't believe that they've gone this long without being, you know, beaten, Derek. I thought that somebody would have done something. But they've to be fair to them, they've steamrolled everybody so far this season.
Yeah. So, kind of on that note, we will stop this rubbish chat now and we will go down into the Blue Room.
Yes. We'll be right back.
Right, a couple of bits and pieces to talk about in the Blue Room here. First thing is the utter bullshit that two papers were talking during the week, which was reports of Mike Ashley is planning a £30 million takeover of us,
yeah.
And he's absolutely shocked at the state the club is in. Well, you should have thought about that before then.
Exactly.
Bullshit, because there is no up-and-coming share issue to our knowledge, so it would rely on him buying shares off of other people.
Yeah.
And one of the things as well is this whole law of dual ownership thing seems to be changing every time this issue come up. It was meant to be an issue when Newcastle were in the Premiership. It was meant to be more of an issue when Newcastle got relegated because the Football League had stricter rules. Nothing's ever happened about that, from what I see. And now that he's apparently going to own, you know, up to 50% by the sound of it, then it's still not going to be an issue for according to the paper. So I'm claiming bullshit on the whole lot there, so I'm not worried about it in the slightest.
Yes, no, I don't think, again, I think this is a complete non-story fabrication from the haters out there, which certainly annoyed a lot of people. I was like you straight away, Derek. I thought to myself, bullshit, as soon as I heard that. Complete non-story. The way the papers had it was that he was basically just going to come out and buy out Dave King and take full control of the club and all that. I just think that's a complete load of nonsense. As you say, Newcastle are on the brink of getting promoted back to the Premier League. So, again, I don't think his interest would come to us in any way, shape or form when he's got a team about to go into the English Premiership again.
As we keep saying, Newcastle are the case in point. They're currently sitting with something like £150-odd million debt. If he was to, you say, bye-bye, I'm selling up, I'm going, and just pull my money and recall the debt, basically, then Newcastle would be in shit street.
Yes.
So, you know, Newcastle owes him so much money that he's that far invested, he's not going to sell up in that. So, you know, he's never going to own any more of us. And plus as well, to get the shareholding he's got, I think he's already had to ask the SFA for special permission to do that. So, you know, are they going to allow him to have any more, especially £30 million worth? It's never going to happen.
No, never. No, as you say, a complete non-story. I think you should just move on, to be perfectly honest with you.
Next one here is the Supreme Court hearing for the EBTs. Is getting held next week. 2-day hearing, so it's a five judge panel, I think. So that's going to see what that is. As we said the last time, still could potentially go to the European Supreme Court. But apparently there was stories today as well coming out of Sky Sports News that if the HMRC do lose this case, then they probably will go after the individuals rather than the entity.
I've seen that, which could be huge. I think it's going to be huge regardless what the outcome is, Derek. I think if it goes, you know, against the club, apparently it's going to open the floodgates for them going after loads of other clubs. If it doesn't, it means that they're going to be starting to go after the individuals as well. So regardless what happens, I think it's going to be a really, really big thing, and there's going to be a lot of people in the shit, basically. But we'll just have to wait and see again what happens there.
Yep. Next one here is Mike Ashley again. Rangers have had to pay Mike Ashley and Charles Green legal fees.
Yeah.
That was the headline. It made you think that Rangers have abandoned the whole case, but from the way I'm reading it, it was for one day's worth of expenses only. Mm-hmm. It was obviously in the relation to the case that Rangers are taking against them about the naming rights and the sale of that. Rangers went to court to apparently try and get documents, and then, you know, there was something asked and then they withdrew the request. So it's basically, from what I read, it's just one day's worth of expenses, a few thousand pounds. Not the whole thing like the headlines made out in the papers.
Yeah, okay, right, no bother.
Next one here is Ali McQuaid has been silent for so long, and just when the whole manager thing coming to light, he's decided to rear his head here.
I know. Pretty silly, I think, Derek, to be honest with you. I think he was maybe just starting to come back into a positive light with a lot of the fans after everything that happened, and I think he's really just needing to keep his mouth shut for quite a wee while. And but I think it was pretty silly, some of the stuff that he was coming away with.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, claimed that, you know, that that Rangers need investment. Well, he was one of the people who failed to vote on Resolution 11 during the last AGM, which would have led to more investment in the club. On that note, he did come out and say that he wasn't to blame for that Resolution 11 failing. He says that his decision not to vote in the AGM should have been a private thing, and it was deliberately leaked to the media so that fans would turn against him. Well, he's starting to sound like somebody from the east side there. He says that he's not the only high-profile shareholder not to vote in Resolution 11, and it never failed because of him. He stated he was out of the country. Well, if I'm of the right belief, he could have proxied it like
yes,
he did again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or I'm pretty sure there was a postal thing that he could have done as well.
Yep.
And he said that he's turned up to other votes like that. He said he turned up at the EGM against the advice of his lawyer. But, well, why would the lawyer advise not to turn up and not to vote on that? So sack the fucking lawyer then, if that's the case. So
yep.
He just made himself out to be a twat there.
He also has criticised the board's decision to go after a director of football, saying that that's a completely ridiculous. Well, I'm saying that's what he said, but along the lines, it was that it's a bad idea. It's never going to work, and it's basically a, you know, just investment that the club needs. But at the same time, Ali McCoist spent a lot of money on players, a lot of money on, I'm not saying it was him that brokered the deals, but a lot of the players that McCoist brought in for a lot of money when we were down in the bottom league that didn't work out, a lot of money that was wasted there as well, Ali. So you shouldn't really, you know, people in glass houses and all of that should maybe have just kept your mouth closed and didn't weighed in on this as well, because everybody knows the financial problems that we've had over the last 5 years, and I think that he added to a lot of them as well, Derek, and he made a very, very, very good living out of us. Even when he wasn't working for us, he was still earning top whack as a, you know, as a first team coach. So it's I think it was pretty silly him coming out, and it's getting a lot of fans annoyed and angry with him with the stuff that he said. I mean, to me, he'll always be a legend as a player. It didn't work out as a coach, and just everything that happened at the end was just a shambles, the whole garden and leaf thing and everything like that, and the fact that he was on, you know, a huge amount of money when we were going through such financial problems was a lot of fans will not forget that, unfortunately.
No. Next thing here, we'll get on to a section about Club 1872.
No, again.
Obviously, the usual kind of stuff that's happening on Twitter, you know, backwards and forwards between people not liking it and liking it. One of the things that I was either on follow or Twitter, that even members don't even know the full amount of members they actually have got. So it's a bit of a strange one, that. So all about communication. A couple of bits and pieces they put out here was the members of Club 1872 have voted against the strict liability rules that the Scottish Government are putting together. Next bit here was actually a fantastic piece, which is more like what we should be getting from them, and it was obviously about their meeting with Stuart Robertson. You know, it started off, it was a big piece that's open on their website, so certainly go and have a read at that.
Mm-hmm.
They did, you know, stress to Stuart Robertson that the importance of a working relationship with the board and being independent from the board.
Yes.
Where possible, Robertson's going to meet face-to-face with the board members of Club 1872 every month, and even Robertson suggested having a conference call on a weekly basis, so that's, you know, certainly
okay.
A good way
yes.
forward.
Mm-hmm. Aye, definitely.
They did also say that they wanted to be treated as like a shareholder, because obviously they've got just over 5% worth of shares, and notified of any important decisions. So that certainly was agreed on. My kind of thing about that, though, is say I'm a shareholder of Rangers, am I going to get that same you know, courtesy from the Rangers board if a big decision like that was coming out? So it would be interesting to see if you know, the little shareholders, as it were, just the individuals
yeah.
like me or you who do it.
I think it would come down to, well, you know, as you say, that it's not what should be, and not, you know, I think it would come down to the size of or the amount of shares that you did hold, Derek. But
yeah.
as you say, if you only if you had a small amount of shares in Rangers, I don't think you would have any say in anything like that. So
I don't mean a say, just that they're saying they want notified and to be treated like a shareholder, because they actually are shareholders. Obviously, the vehicle they're using is they are shareholders as a group. But anyway, the whole communication, that actual update was actually pretty good, pretty enlightening. Mm-hmm. That's more what we want from them.
Definitely, in
the past, as I've found, certainly it's been certain members anyway have been very defensive of it, and they want you to sign up before you get any information. Mm-hmm. But that's what I think the whole thing should be like, is if they've had meetings like that, be very open about it. Put it out to the free internet, not behind a paywall of membership.
Certainly, going by what you're saying there, Derek, that's very encouraging for the fact. And as you say, that's what people who would be getting involved with it want to hear, that there is, going to be, the communication with the club is going to be so much better, and there's going to be regular meetings with them and regular communication so they know exactly what's going on. That, as you say, if that had been what had been said from the beginning, I think it would have been a lot more successful. So we just have to hope that is the case, and good luck to them, because that is what we were wanting from them from the beginning.
Yeah.
But as you say, there has been a lot of hostility there, which isn't great for people like yourself who were just genuinely wanting to know what the ins and outs it all were, and were looking for details as to exactly what was going on. We just hope they can be still open and clear on everything in the future as well, but that certainly does sound really, really hopeful for them, so good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of these things that you've got to be watching because of all the idiots out there in terms of, fans of other clubs. I would have liked it if the whole thing was, the model of Club 1872 was a membership thing where you sign up for, you don't pay money to it unless you want to. And when I mean pay money, that goes towards whatever, thing they're trying to do, or the shareholder. But obviously with the problem with that is you could get a fan of anybody signing up and just causing chaos and saying that you're a member, but you're actually really a Celtic fan signing up for this. Because believe me, everybody knows they would probably do it. So in terms of that, that would, everything, it was more open, it wasn't closed, and I think that's where a lot of the hostilities came from, is because before you find out anything, you have to pay your money, which is not the way really a business or a commodity works. You know what you're buying before you buy it, and a lot of the time, it's been so far, I've found is, well, that's not the case. You have to sign up before you know what you're buying, effectively. So that's just my personal opinion. If people want to debate it, that's up to them. But certainly, as we just said, that's along the right lines.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we've got a section coming back now. Dave, take it away for the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Back where, Derek, back in time, yes, it is back. Gotta get back in time. I've thought long and hard about this, Derek, as to what game that I was going to do. I was thinking about European matches, and I had the pleasure of watching that Barcelona Paris Saint Germain game last night, which was incredible. And I was thinking about, is there games that we could put, incredible comebacks that we've had. But the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I thought we really need an Old Firm game, and a game away from home at Parkhead, a game that was down, a lot of people given 100%, showing that hard work can pay off. So I had a look back at the internet, and I have settled upon a game which happened way back in 1992. As you said, Derek, you were only 7 years old at that point, so there's no way that you'll remember that. I was 17 years old at this point. I can remember it, clearly. This was the season before I got my season ticket at Ibrox. This was, and I was right into the football. I was going to as many games as I could, and I will remember this game. Yep, it was New Year's Day the 1st of January 1992, and we played Celtic at Parkhead. It was the old Admiral kit, Derek. You remember that, with McEwan's lager on the front and the very yep. short shorts? Do you remember that? I had my Admiral kit when that came out. That was bought. I was delighted with it at the point. I thought it was really cool. When you look back now, the shorts do look ridiculous because they were rather short. But back in those days, that was the norm. So the Rangers team in that day, some absolute class act players here, if you think about it. Now, we started off the one and only Andy Gorham in goals. Now, we had our back four back then was Gary Stevens, England international right back, Davy Robertson, who's a fantastic left-back for us. Richard Goff, obviously the captain. Oleg Kuznetsov played in that match, centre-half. And then into midfield, we had two, who I would say, defensive midfielders in there, and Nigel Spackman and Stuart McCall were playing in the centre. We had Dale Gordon on the right-hand side and Alexei Mikhailichenko, a classy Russian player, on the left-hand side, or Ukrainian as he is now. And then up front, the partnership, the duo of Ali McCoist and Mark Catley. The Celtic team then, Derek, I don't know if you can remember much about these players. I certainly can. They had some memorable players in their time. They had Gordon Marshall in goals, McNally, Tony Mowbray, Derek White. Again, in midfield, they're sort of hatchet men in there. Galloway and Peter Grant, and then Paul McStay in midfield, John Collins, and their strike force that day. Tony Cascarino, remember him? And Tommy Coyne, some of them. So the game started in typical fashion, end-to-end stuff. There was a lot. If you think about the midfield there, Derek, you had Mike Galloway, Peter Grant against Stuart McCall and Nigel Spackman. So it was there was a lot of hard tackles going in. And fairly, right at the start of the game, Alexei Mikhailichenko brought John Collins down an absolute, a belter of a tackle, wasn't even booked, whereas in these days, he would have been booked straight away for something like that. But Celtic were putting a lot of pressure on us, high balls into the box. But sort of early on in the game, one of the high balls into the box, headed away by Richard Goff, broke to Alexei Mikhailichenko. He played a fantastic crossfield ball to Ali McCoist on the right-hand side. McCoist, the first-time ball back into the middle for Dale Gordon, who played a 1-2 back to Ali McCoist at the edge of the box, and McCoist had a sort of dinked chip shot, which, at first glance, you thought was going to settle right in the top corner, but it just went past the far post there. Really unlucky. It would have been a fantastic goal, but Rangers were showing, at that point that they were really... They were really going for it, and at that point I thought it was quite funny that the guy that was doing the commentating, I think it was Jock Brown actually, had said that it was possibly a cross by McCoist looking for somebody. But when you remember the McCoist, there's no way that he was trying to set anybody else up. He was going for goal every single time. So we had a great counter-attack just after that as well. High ball to Mark Catley, knocked it down to McCoist again on the left-hand side, and he crossed the ball back into Mark Catley, who had a bullet header, absolutely pounding header, which just went over the bar. So we were really putting them under pressure there, big time. Then we had a corner not long after that, which was fired into the near post, and Gordon Marshall spilled it. It was almost missed, but he managed to get his hands on it at the second time. And then we had a high ball, which is there, a high ball which was led on, completely missed by the Celtic defence, straight onto the path of Ali McCoist, who has a first-time shot, and it was cleared off the line, Derek. Now, this is controversial. It was Mark McNally that was on the line at the time. The goalkeeper completely missed it. Ali McCoist, first-time shot, heading for goal, and McNally kind of slid in to clear it. Clearly hit his hand. Clear penalty. No, totally, because it actually bounced up, hit him in the hand, his hand was out, clear penalty, should have been sent off, you know, denying a goal scoring opportunity, that absolutely nothing given whatsoever. So we're really unlucky at that point that we never got a penalty. Celtic had never been in the game at all in the first half, but they had their one chance. Paul McStay to Tommy Coyne, the right hand side, he had a shot, it went wide. That was about as much as it came to for Celtic. Rangers were really all over them in this half, Derek, and it was approaching half time. We had another chance. Stuart McCall with a fantastic tackle in the middle of the park, passed the ball straight through to McCoist in the centre. He seen Mikhailichenko out in the left wing. He played a 1-2. It was back to Ali McCoist again. He was on the edge of the box, and you actually see Ali McCoist, he performed a step over and beat his man, got to the edge of the box, and again chipped the ball. It was just, about 2 inches over the bar. Very unlucky. We thought that we were going to go in at half-time, 0-0, which was what Celtic were praying for, but right on the stroke of half-time.
There's Peter Grant coming straight into Speckman, who's strong enough to get through White. Here's Dale Gould. This is a good chance for Rangers, right on half-time whistle. Cross to Hadley. Here's McCoist! It's first blood to Rangers, right on the half-time whistle.
Nigel Spackman wins the ball in midfield, passed the ball to Dale Gordon. Dale Gordon with a fantastic cross to Mark Hatley, who was sort of back of the left-hand side of the penalty area. And Hatley went for the volley. He went for the volley to try and hit it, but he mishit his shot, and his shot bounced right across the face of the goal, right in front of Ali McCoist, who slid in, the ball right underneath Gordon Marshall into the net, 1-0 to Rangers. More than we deserved in the whole game, because we'd been all over Celtic at that point. The one thing I thought was hilarious was Jock Brown had said that it was a fantastic cross by Mark Hatley, but I think if you look back, you can see that he was actually gone for the volley and he mishit it, and it fell straight for McCoist. But we weren't caring. Ali McCoist scored the goal. Absolutely fantastic. We went in 1-0 up at half-time. In the second half, you just knew that Celtic would have to come back. They were at home, as they did, and straight away, Celtic scored.
Galloway's corner driven in, and a bulging header from Tony Mowbray!
From a corner, Tony Mowbray, of all people, with a header from the corner to make it 1-1. So for then it was sort of end-to-end stuff. Stuart McCall had a shot from the edge of the box which just went wide. Then there was a substitution made for Rangers, and John Bomber Brown come on for Stuart McCall, which was to be pivotal to us. Peter Hustra had also came on, I think it was possibly for Mikhailichenko, came on. So straight after that, Gary Stevens were across for the right hand side. There was Peter Hustra right in the centre, right in the 6 yard box. He had nobody to beat. He absolutely bulleted a header, Derek, from, as I say, for the 6 yard box. Unfortunately, he headed it straight at Gordon Marshall. Now, with the power and the pace that he put on the header, it was still a fantastic save by Gordon Marshall, to be fair to him, because it was just total reflexes. But we should have went in 2-1 up for there. Absolutely incredible. And then John Brown won the ball a few minutes later.
Brown picks up the loose ball in midfield, though. That's for McCoist. Marshall is committed. And McCoist can't get up. And the ref is given a penalty. Gordon Marshall penalised for holding on to McCoist's legs.
He won the ball, and he seen McCoist on a run through the box. So he passed the ball straight through to McCoist in the box. Now, McCoist ran, he was running diagonally away for the goal. Gordon Marshall slid out, got his hands to the ball, but didn't hold on to the ball. So McCoist sort of got up to run after the ball, and Gordon Marshall just grabbed him and sort of rolled over the top of Ali McCoist, stopping him from getting up, stopping him from getting near the ball. Again, it's clear a penalty, as you'll see. It wasn't a goal scoring opportunity, I'll say that, because he was running away from goal, but he was trying to get the ball. So it was a clear penalty. So it was Mark Hatley who took it.
Dodge Hatley against Marshall. Beautifully taken penalty kick. Rangers are back in front. And Hatley gets his 14th goal of the season.
Stepped up, confident as you like. Hit the ball low into the left corner, 2-1 to Rangers, we were up, and from then on we didn't look back. Celtic had tried to get a few chances to get back into the game, but the only chance that really stood out for Celtic was a shot by Paul McStay for the edge of the box. It looked as if it was going into the top corner. Great save by Andy Gorham. And then Gary Stevens, short time after that, headed the ball clear. The ball fell to Nigel Spackman.
Spackman again, John Brown's in the middle, Alstra on the left, McCoy's in the inside right position, here's Brown going all the way himself, that settles it! John Brown ends the match in a contest with that rifling left foot shot!
It was a good series of play, as I say. Stevens headed the ball clear to Nigel Spackman, he played it back to Gary Stevens, who played the ball again back to Spackman, on to John Brown. Now, John Brown was about the halfway line at this point, picked up the ball. He just kept running, Derek, and running. And that was the thing then. He had both McCoist and Hatley had made runs out onto the wings. It sort of took the Celtic defenders away with him. It gave John Brown time. He ran through. He kept running. He looked as if he was going to shoot. He faked that. He took one more step and hit a fantastic shot with his left foot low to the back post. It hit the back post, fired into the net. An absolutely fantastic goal by John Brown. And this is the memory that I'll have of John Brown, actually, when he scored that, because you could see how absolutely ecstatic he was by scoring that goal. He ran, he jumped to Hordins, just run up to celebrate with the fans, with his hands up in the air. Fantastic goal. It was a great performance by Rangers. It was just sheer hard work, Derek, that got us the win that day. We had some fantastic players on show also. I think at that point, away back in 1992, we think it was sort of 7 or 8 players that we had in the team that were all worth over £1 million. So, you know, some fantastic players on show. And again, if you get the chance to go back and look at it, just even to see John Brown at the end of the goal that he scored, absolutely fantastic, and we just hope and pray that we can get a similar performance to that this Sunday with the game at Parkhead. But no, really, it was great watching it. I actually watched it about 3 times just to see some of the goals, and actually just even to see. We were talking about Ali McCoist there, Derek. A lot of people seem to think that Ali McCoist basically was just a poacher, but see, watching that game, some of his link-up play was absolutely fantastic as well. So seeing McCoist in his prime also, it's great to watch. And again, I urge anybody to go and have a wee look on YouTube and watch that game. Good stuff.
Yep. And if you look really, really closely at Bomber Brown's mouth as he was celebrating, he was shouting, "Show me the deeds!"
Is that what exactly?
Were you believing that there?
I thought you were going to say something else there, actually.
I thought I had on there.
No. That was about 30 years too early for that, Derek, I think.
Yeah, I actually did watch that game just before we started recording, yeah. And you know, it was a bloody meaty game. It was what an Old Firm needs to get back to. You know,
there was some credible. But as I say, if you looked at the midfield then, Derek, we had Spackman, who was a defensive midfielder. We had Stuart McCall, who was a sort of tough tackling midfielder. And Celtic were exactly the same. They had Peter Grant, who was their sort of hatchet man in midfield, along with Mike Galloway, who was also, you know, known for being the hard man in midfield as well. So, you know, they had some hard, tough tacklers in there, along with the sort of more, shall we say, majestic players like sort of Alexei Mikhailichenko, Dale Gordon as well. So no, but it was a really good game. Had some fantastic players back then, and it's good to go back and look. It's just a pity that we're no like that the new way.
Yeah, pretty much, but. Hopefully we'll get back to that. I know,
we've been saying that for years now.
So, that was another great section from Dave. So, hopefully, now that we've got the kind of timing sorted out, we'll get back to doing this more regularly.
We'll definitely get some more done, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I enjoyed doing that, actually, Derek, and writing down. The thing about getting these games for so long ago is getting the team sheets right. You've actually got to sit and watch the game and sort of fill in the blanks as you're watching the game with a lot of them. But, no, it was good fun to do.
So, we'll move now on to the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
Right, a few bits and pieces in the news here, Rangers and non-Rangers related. First one here is, despite Cranshaw resuming light training, he's been ruled out for the rest of the season. So,
yes.
Initially reported he's back in full training, mind you. We said that the last episode, but
yeah,
I think we had kind of wrote him off anyway. Considering
yes,
that
I think so.
Even if it came back tomorrow for the game on Sunday, it would be still, you know, it was still looking for match fitness. So
definitely.
Next one here is Frank McParland has been appointed Director of Football at Notts Forest.
No.
Kel surprise.
No. Really?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that can't be right because, you know, they all denied that there was any kind of approach and everything there, surely.
Yep.
I wonder who's going to be named their first team coach at the first available moment, Derek.
Exactly. Oh, one of the other three, Davy Weir, has joined Aston Villa in a scouting role until the end of the season. So I'm guessing he'll be joining them at the end of the season as well.
We'll wait and see. I think, as I say, I think that's still under, we'll not say investigation, but there's still there's legal proceedings there, I think. So we'll not say any more on that than
On Sunday, just past there, there was a scrapyard near to Ibrox ablaze. Again, this has quite happened near to Ibrox, and again, there was pictures emerged that looked like that the fire was coming from Ibrox. So, hopefully not too much damage, and hopefully nobody injured or anything.
I'm sure there must have been a few moon howlers out there were saying that it was Ibrox, it was on fire, surely, no, and it was getting done for the insurance money and all of that. That's what I was expecting, to be perfectly honest with you. I knew it would be a lot of BS.
Well, the best thing I've seen was, it was a caption from another Rangers fan, I think it was, and he says, "Black smoke from Ibrox, they've chosen their new manager."
Very good.
I thought that was brilliant, actually.
Aye, very good.
Matt Crooks on loanee to Scunthorpe United. He's played his first 90 minutes of the season during their 2-0 defeat against Fleetwood. So, you know, I think he's been ravaged with injury this year, but certainly when he has been fit, you know, obviously wasn't he getting a game with us, and he's continued with his injury woes down south, I think. So,
yeah, and Scunthorpe, I think, are maybe even second in League One at the moment, so I mean they're certainly doing quite well, but again he is still our player, so we're hoping that he gains the game time that he requires so that he can get back and, you know, stake a claim for the first team, because I think we had high hopes for him as well, Derek, sort of defensive midfielder, you know, good in the air and things like that. I think that was a player that we really thought could do something for us, but unfortunately, it hasn't to be, but that might change in the future, who knows?
Next one here is Cameron Bell, our former keeper, has had a pop at Warburton, saying that Warburton didn't like confrontation, refused to accept criticism, and did not appreciate the size that Rangers are. He did, however, state that he was actually quite a good coach in the training park, and he had good ideas, but he just wasn't great at man management, which is quite surprising. It's obviously not surprising now that everything's came to light, but surprising in the sense that he always kind of was able to speak well in press conferences and kind of...
Yeah.
Give that so,
yes.
You know, I don't even think Bell had a lot of time with him, 6 months at most.
Aye, if that.
Aye.
And then he was away, so he obviously didn't fancy him, Derek. I mean, I know when we signed Cammy Bell, we were thinking that he would, you know, an experienced SPL goalkeeper. Never really stood out much for me at all when he played there. I wouldn't say he was a bad goalkeeper, but I certainly can't remember any games of thinking, oh, he was absolutely fantastic in that game, and he saved us there. So pretty mediocre performances he had for us, and I think that's how there wasn't much an outcry when he left, to be perfectly honest with you.
I think his howler again in the playoffs against Motherwell was the cement that
kind well of... aye but I mean I think the whole team had a howler in the two games, to be honest with you, so no just him.
Yeah. Next thing here is the SPFL are considering revamping the playoffs. Playoffs have certainly been good, I would have said, since they've came into force in the Premiership and the Championship here, but the way they're doing it is it's kind of unfair on the kind of third place team in the Championship, because they've got six games to play. In fact, it's the second place team in the because they've got six games to play, because that was like us, obviously. So they're now thinking of doing it. The third and fourth place team in the Championship play each other once. The person who's third gets the home tie, and it's a single game shootout. The winner of that game then plays the second place team in the Championship. Again, the second place team has the home tie, one game altogether, and then they go on to play the 11th place team in the Premiership, and they've still to decide if it's home or away games in that last game or just a single game. So certainly maybe a better idea, and it kind of cuts down the kind of unfairness, because obviously the second last place team in the Premiership was getting an easy ride almost. So
no, but apart from when it was us that was in that position, Derek, because we got all we deserved.
Well, aye, well, exactly, aye.
Ah, exactly, yes.
All right, moving on to some other unrelated stuff here. Man crushed to death by his 6-ton porn collection. In modern times, people, including Pamela Anderson, have campaigned against pornography. Taking into account the effect of all the kind of online you get now.
Do you, Derek?
Well, you kind of do. You get tons online now, allegedly, you know. So that I've heard. But, I mean, obviously, online, all the campaigns have been on around online porn. But what they have failed to kind of realise is there's still an appetite there for, you know, prehistoric form of magazine porn.
I dread to think where this has gone, right? On you go.
The 50-year-old who lived in Japan was flattened by 6 tons worth of magazines, which was covered as flat.
6 tons.
According to the Asia Wire, the poor bloke allegedly named Joji was discovered by his landlord 6 months after the incident.
Oh my god. Right, okay.
He was only going round to see why he hadn't paid his rent.
Hopefully he didn't say that wanker better come up with the money. He went the wrong there.
Well, let's say that's one thing.
What else you got for us, Derek?
Well, do you know how last week you did, or last time you did say I kind of need to get my hair cut?
Yeah, oh my god, aye, big time.
Well, I might need to wait, because I might be saving up to go abroad to get it done.
Right, okay.
To go to Kazakhstan, to be precise.
Right, okay.
Barbershop staffed by half-naked strippers is getting customers hot around the collar. A barbershop hit upon a racy new way to attract customers when it enlisted beautiful young hairstylists to work almost completely naked.
Quality.
Men flocked to the Old Bay Salon in Oskamen as well, funnily enough, Kazakhstan, after they enlisted beautiful young hairstylists to work almost completely naked.
Quality. So I take it all your bullshit about you growing your hair, if you were to walk past that barber's, that would just, you know, go completely out the window and you'd be right in there like a dog eating beetroot.
Oh, hi, a dog eating beetroot. What the fuck?
You never heard that same before?
Never heard that one, no.
Right in there like a dog eating beetroot.
The girls were actually dancers from the nearby Zebra Strip Club and agreed to pose for photographs for an online advertising campaign.
None of them are actually qualified hairdressers. You can see guys coming out with their hair at different lengths and like shaved up in the middle and stuff like that. They'd be like, aye, that's fine, hen, that's fine, no bother.
I wouldn't give a fuck.
On a serious note, Derek, when are you getting that haircut?
It's keeping the now. I'm not getting rid of it the now.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You'd be wearing the hat to your work, aye?
Not at all, no. Laughing pervert frog marched naked to police truck after getting caught having sex with a cow. Horrified villagers spotted the 40-year-old man kissing the animal before mounting it from behind.
What village was it, Derek?
I'm not too sure yet. They chased him and he fled naked to the bathroom in a nearby farm, barricading himself inside as furious locals tried to get him out. Officers arrived 30 minutes later and handcuffed him before hauling him naked to the back of a police truck, where he laughed about his depraved act.
There's nothing more I can say about that, Derek.
This has not happened anywhere in any civilised country, by the look of it.
Civilised country, so it might have been in Scotland then.
Well, possibly.
The scary thing now is, Derek, is I used to think that you used to basically just, I'll not say make up these stories, but actually when I was at your house for the last pod, I actually saw that you do have websites and stuff like that you're finding all of these stories from, which is really quite worrying.
Make up story? Come on, my name's no John James.
Allegedly.
Aye. Yes, so it certainly brings a kind of new expression, laughing cow, there. So.
It certainly does, aye.
Yep. So that kind of wraps it up again for this episode. So fortunately we've got it out to or just over 2 weeks since we've done the last one.
Yep, which is quite remarkable for us. I don't think our Twitter followers will quite believe that we've got another pod out this early. But as I say, it was good. There has been a lot happened in that in this short space of the sort of two weeks, Derek. So I would have hated to have seen it if we'd have left it another 3 or 4 weeks. So.
Exactly. So all we can kind of hope for is a good performance at the weekend against Celtic, yes. And then hopefully the new manager comes in and works some magic and we get something sorted there.
Exactly. I think we just have to think positively, Derek. I think that's the only thing that we can do. Try and think good thoughts when it comes to Sunday, and hopefully something will happen. I just like to think that they'll go out and really go for it, but only time will tell.
Yes. So, it's a good night from me and...
A good night for him.
Aye.
Cheers.
Catch you later.
That's the first time I've ever had morphine, man. It was absolutely fucking brilliant.